What's up, Brainiacs? Hope you're enjoying the podcast. Just a programming note that every Monday at 9 Central, you can join me, Andrew Cieslak, and Josh Custodio for Monday Night Program. Come hang out with us as we continue to build the WBCW universe using Fire Pro Wrestling Promoter Mode. Who should we sign? What matches should we book? Join us for the only professional wrestling program on Monday nights. That's Monday Night Program on twitch.tv/wrestlingbrain.
Comics in the combat zone, comics in the combat zone. Usually we make you laugh, but now we're watching guys get stabbed with light tubes.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to CZW Comics in the Combat Zone. This week we're talking CZW Uneffin' Believable, which happened April 14th, 2001 in Smyrna, Delaware, at Station 44, back in the fire station. Ben, how does that feel?
Unsafe, for sure, for that community.
Yeah.
Like, not ideal. Like, imagine that. Imagine you're just in a fire and they're like, what's going on? Where are just screaming in, like, where are they? And you're just like, all you can hear
the
is like Zandig.
Are yeah. running towards the truck and they're like stepping on broken glass and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah,
like, ah, fuck.
One of the firefighters just gets a chair shot to the head as he's trying to get in the in his uniform.
It's ultra violent.
Yeah, yeah. CZ fucking W.
No, it is wild. So the show begins. We open with Trent Acid backstage. We get a vignette here, a rare CZW vignette.
Yeah, it's like a skit, like early rap album skits.
It is funny watching Trent Acid act, because knowing him, he's probably like stoned as well. And he's like, looking around, looking for June Kasai. Then the camera pans to the right, and we see June Kasai slide down the fire pole with no shirt on, like complete in wrestling attire.
Yeah, that maybe would have burnt a bit, but yeah, no, probably
the least
not.
Of his worries. By
yeah,
the end of this
true, true. But yeah, no, he looks, you know, he's getting about, he's a crazy monkey, and he looks a bit like a cheeky monkey at the moment as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, him and Trent Acid, both cheeky monkeys, I would say.
For sure.
When it's funny, because that's always been his gimmick, and I've only known June Kasai in like the modern iteration, where he is just a deathmatch legend, just covered in scars head to toe. But like back now, he's like a young boy. He's got like the monkey tail, like a Saiyan from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
He's like, he is the cheeky monkey. They keep calling him the king of the banana deathmatch, which I have no idea what that is, but I'd love to see one.
It sounds exciting. Maybe it's like Mario Kart, you throw bananas. Also, you mentioned Dragon Ball Z. Just want to give a shout out to Toriyama, who passed away recently as of this podcast, you know, a legend of the game. So
that is heartbreaking.
Yeah, for sure.
How did June Kasai outlive him? That's what's crazy to me.
How did Zandig?
Yeah, that's true.
How did any of them? But yeah, no, shout out to the big man. Great anime, but yeah.
Yeah, well, whatever. So no, I'm kidding.
Fucking
so
weebs.
Acid's just pumping up Kasai, and he's like, we're going to fucking beat these guys tonight. It's going to be fucking awesome. And they walk outside. They're walking around Delaware, and Delaware looks gray and depressing. You can see why they have no laws and just welcome deathmatch wrestling into their community.
Yeah, yeah. The fire station isn't even used until the wrestling gets involved. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they pass by a limo, and our commentator, John Hitman House, waves out to them and invites them into the limo. I was like, okay, so I guess he just travels around in a limo. He is our heel commentator, I guess, and I guess limos are heel in a way. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the emissions were higher back then. I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, you get, you know, a bit of luxury. I don't know if I'd get in a limo if he beckoned me in, but, you know, yeah. Different strokes.
And then we cut camera, and I figured that was going to come up later. And then when the camera comes back, we're in the back of the limo. And John Hitman House is in the middle. Kasai's on the left of him. Trent Acid's on the right. And it's now like an interview segment. And I was like, okay, this show is weird. I looked at the time. We're at 2.5 hours here on this show. So I guess they do have a lot of time to fill.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's just doing the mic and starts doing promo for the show. And then Kasai just starts talking Japanese. And Acid is like translating for him. And Acid's like, oh yeah, Kasai just said he loves American women with big tits. And everyone, John House is like, who doesn't? I mean,
yeah.
This is, you know, come on, this is America.
I don't know if he said that, though.
I don't know if Trent Acid speaks Japanese.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I think he does, and he just mistranslated on purpose like a naughty boy.
That is funny.
Yeah, I don't, the thing, genuinely don't know whether June Kasai speaks English at this point. I'm sure he'd like,
I don't think he does.
Yeah, at this, like, in his career, I'm sure he learned to eventually, but, like, at this point, you're just like, what a wild situation, because none of them will speak Japanese. So I guess they're just like, corolling him about and just being like, yeah, you just need to stand over here.
Yeah, he's so young, too. He must be in his early 20s here. Like, I'd love to know how old he is.
Yeah, it's very funny. There's a shot of them walking to the limo, and you can just see his back, and his back is torn to fuck already.
Already.
Yeah, already.
Dude,
like,
the fact that he's on this show is, like, mind-blowing to me. Like,
yeah, absolutely nuts.
No, I don't think it's that big of a spoiler, but I'm pretty sure he wins Tournament of Death 20 or 21. And as of this podcast, there's not even been a Tournament of Death yet. Like,
yeah.
His longevity is fucking crazy.
Spoilers for Tournament of Death 20.
Yeah, once this podcast, we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, eventually, yeah. Let's try and forget that. But so, yeah, it's wild.
So then Acid translates his next sentence, and he's like, Kasai's telling you, John House, that you need a shower. And John House is all offended and shit, and Acid's like, I didn't say it. Yeah. It was Kasai. There's some funny stuff here.
I think that was perfectly translated. That guy looks like he smells.
And then finally, John House asks about Johnny Cashmere, and Acid just says he's sick of this talk. He asks the limo to pull over, as if they're acting like the limo's moving. It's clearly like a
limo. Yeah.
And then we get our another cut. And I do like that this has been the ongoing story with Trent Acid versus Johnny Cashmere. They really are building up this match into like a big sort of match.
Yeah.
And I don't have any problem with that. I think
it's good to have long-term booking and storytelling and things, you know. Arguably an intrinsic part of wrestling.
Yes.
So it's good to have those as well.
Then we get our other cut, and we see the other half of the commentary team. Eric Gargiulo is out just in the parking lot with the fans as they're sort of siphoning into the building. And we see John Dahmer and Eddie Valentine appear. And they get time to answer one question. I forget what Eric's like, whoa, you ready for tonight? And then they're like, yeah, we're ready. And literally 2 seconds later, you hear some fans scream and Nick Gage and Nate Hatred appear and just attack them from behind and beat the shit out of them in the parking lot.
It's very funny to see them in the daylight.
Yeah, Nate Hatred in full face paint, apparel.
Just funny to imagine that's how he gets about in his day-to-day life. Like, he doesn't break character. He is always dressed like that with his makeup on.
Yeah, because, they have locker rooms. You'd assume they change into that when they
get
there.
Yeah, no, he's always like that. With his makeup on as well.
This is how he wakes up first thing in the morning.
Yeah, because he's not in the first match, so he's just like, yeah, I'll just wait for a couple of hours, but... There's a couple of kids in the crowd as well that you see, and some of them are like, whoa, that's John Dahmer. Holy shit.
Dude, how cool would it be, though, if you
to see
like
John Dahmer? I know. To see him get beat up. Yeah, that would be sick.
No, I just mean if you're like a 9-year-old, like in the parking lot waiting to go inside, and then they shoot an angle right out front, you'd probably be like, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah, you would. Especially if like you're at that age, you're probably just like, I just love wrestling so much. I love CZW. I shouldn't be watching this. There should not be any kids in the crowd, but I love it anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you'd be like, this is amazing.
Yeah, and then we get another cut, and then we're back outside with John House and Gargiulo together, and they're standing in front of a fire truck, which is sort of funny, and they're running down the card, which is just full of spoilers. I sort of hate when they do this. I like being surprised by matches in CZW as opposed to like getting the full rundown off the top. And the one thing they say that I will note is that Zandig is in the UK tonight and won't be here.
Did he say the UK?
Yeah, he's all over the place, dude.
Oh, I thought I just assumed it was Japan again, but he's in the UK. When
2001, I don't know who we would have been wrestling for.
Yeah, well, that is wild, because the UK scene, maybe it was bigger, but I don't know, maybe he was William Regal. Maybe he brought him over.
Yeah, maybe. He's probably fighting in Blackpool, like fighting a bear or something.
Yeah, for sure. He's fighting his demons in Blackpool.
So then we cut, and by this point, we're 10 minutes into the show, so this has been like a full 10 minutes of vignettes and interview. And then the announcer is in the ring, and he runs down the entire card again. And I'm like, do we need to include both of these in the footage? Like,
yeah, and there's title... Yeah, like you said, there's title cards as well, so it's just like layer after layer. There's no chance of letting you forget who's in each match.
One part I did forget to say is when Gargiulo was in the parking lot, he's like, who here brought a weapon today? And the fans just hold up like light tubes and like just golf clubs.
To do that outside a fire station as well is very funny.
Fucking
like,
crazy.
Just to yell, who here brought, which is like, that's America, baby. Like,
yeah.
Who here brought a weapon?
Because it's the fans bring the weapons match that we get in our second to last match, but it's just like,
they're real weapons.
Insane. They're letting them into the building.
Yeah, they're not like, yeah, it's like, you know, when they do a pat down. I mean, I guess this is what 9/11 ruined for everyone. But when they do a pat down, like, no, you can't bring your weapon in here. They're like, you can't come in without a weapon, bro. Like,
literally no handguns might be the only, like,
And yeah, the one time Americans are okay leaving their guns at home is when they know they can bring a sword into the arena.
Yeah, so the announcer also makes sure to tell fans, if anyone enters the ring, you will be ejected and your weapons will be confiscated.
That's the only way your weapons get confiscated.
Is if you like actively put yourself into the match.
Yeah, yeah, don't do that.
And so the first person out on this show wearing a shirt that says Ignite Hardcore is Justice Payne. And I sort of, like, is that a logo he's trying to get over? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's wearing gay. Looks, odd.
He cuts a good promo, hyping up the crowd, saying there's no Zandig tonight. And then he brings up Nick Burke. And he says Nick Burke doesn't have an opponent tonight. And that's bullshit because he's one of the most talented guys back there. And if you remember the last time we were in Station 44, we had a Justice Payne-Nick Burke sort of connection. And there's something about these two I just like together. Like, Justice Payne is so rarely nice to anybody. But for some reason, Nick Burke has his respect.
Maybe something happened in the back, but yeah, it's strange. I don't know. Like, Justice Payne feels like maybe he's stepping up a bit and taking it a bit more seriously. So maybe he's just like, oh, I need to do some actual character work or something.
Yeah, and then so Nick Burke comes out as he's called to the ring. Justice Payne confirms with him that he doesn't have a match tonight. Says, oh, you know Zandig, he must have forgot. But then he's like, you know who else doesn't have a match back there? Zabar. And so Burke is like, I'll fight Zabar. And then for some reason, Zabar just comes out.
Yeah.
Like, why would you like walk into this lion's den if you're Zabar? Not even with Trent Acid or anyone, just alone. And he's sort of coming out with confidence. He gets a mic, and the fans just drown him out with chance of shut the fuck up. And then he's like, you know what, Justice Payne, you don't make the matches. Zandig does, so fuck you. And he goes to leave. And then Smack and Justin Case appear to just block him. I don't know about you. I thought these two looked actually cool for once.
Yeah. So for once, they always look cool. Max Smack with his packet of crisps normally.
Or a cigarette.
Yeah, nothing cooler. Yeah, nothing cooler, bro.
And so they block him, and the bell rings, and our first match of the night is Zabar versus Nick Burke. And I think this is a bit of rehab to Nick Burke, because they've been sort of fucking him around, and like he's just been like taking L's for weeks now. So it's just him beating the fuck out of Zabar. He punches him once, and Zabar just like comically dives over the top rope, and then Burke does this dangerous like Undertaker dive and almost just breaks his neck. Like, it's one of those just where he goes over and lands straight down on his head. And I was like, oh man, Zabar's gonna win just by forfeit, but it doesn't happen. He throws Bar into the sea of chairs and then bashes him into the commentary table. And Eric Gargiulo, he's like the babyface commentator, but he's always over the top. He's like, yeah, do it, Burke. You're doing it for all of us. We love it. It's like so over the top. I just thought it was funny. But then they get in the ring, and Zabar hits a blatant low blow and starts getting his punches in. But it's funny. This would happen like 3 or 4 times. Zabar has to openly cheat, and then he's got the advantage for about 5 seconds. And then Burke will just hit like a big suplex or a brain buster. So that happens again. And then Barr just throws powder in his eyes. And again, Burke just back elbows him, hits a face buster, then a moonsault. Barr kicks out at 2 somehow. So Burke goes outside and grabs a chair. Again, Barr hits another low blow, then goes for Zandig's finisher. Like, he tries to gorilla press him.
Yeah, I don't know why he tried this. He's he's not nowhere near strong enough to do with that to any
he's
of them.
He's so lanky.
Yeah,
he
is.
He looks like he weighs 150 pounds, like, soaking wet.
Yeah, and there's no chance he could lift any of the wrestlers on the roster.
Mm-hmm. And then Nick Burke lifts him up for the Burke driver, and Brian Logan, the referee, just lays the chair down for him. And so Burke just, like, lands the move onto the chair. And Brian does a fast count for the Nick Burke win at 4 minutes and 29 seconds. I thought this was sort of a fun way to start the show.
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, it was all right. It was good. It was solid. I mean, yeah, it was all right.
It was inoffensive.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like a bit of story work opening with that. It's better than a Dharma opening match, though.
Yes, exactly. And so then we cut. And out first is the new team that sort of like seems to be, you know, in the first or second match. Jeff Rocker and Doomsday Danny Rose.
Yeah.
The two guys who look nothing alike. They have like nothing to do with one another. It's just such a random team.
It is very strange. Like that, it looks like brothers who have gone in wildly different directions in life. That's the only way they'd hang out.
Yeah, like Rocker is the football guy that the dad was a big fan of.
Yeah,
Danny Rose is like the emotional, like
the emo. Yeah, the school shooter who's just like, I hate my life.
And Rocker's just looking extra juicy here. It's crazy
extra
how
juicy.
It's crazy week after week. Sometimes he looks like deflated, like he hasn't pumped up his muscles, and other times he looks just ridiculous.
Yeah, he looks pretty jacked.
Yeah, So Rose gets a microphone, and he's like insulted they're not in the title match tonight. And the commentators are like, you lost your debut last week.
Yeah.
Like, why would you get a title match? You're like, it was a number one contenders match, and you lost. And so they said they're going to smash the Briscoes tonight instead. And cue the Briscoes. They rush the ring, and the match begins. Did you think the Briscoes were going to get a good match out of these two when we started?
Not really, no. I mean, I didn't expect, you know, I think the Briscoes are very good, but the other guys are not great. Mm-hmm. But and also, I will note, the Briscoes looked different for the first time. Like, I could kind of tell them apart.
Me too.
For the first time. So, but yeah, you know. But I actually thought this match was all right.
Yeah, well, they'll always go in the drastic different directions. And eventually, by their Ring of Honor careers, you'd see. Where Jay is the super serious one who, like, never, like, smiles. And Mark Briscoe's, like, this goofy maniac. And so that's sort of beginning here. And I assume Mark's the younger one. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, not by a lot, I didn't think. I thought they were, like, pretty similar age. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, so the Briscoes open with double spinning wheel kicks. They send both the heels outside. And then one Briscoe just presses the other over the top onto the heels. It was Jay who's pressed over. And then Mark springboards onto all three of them. Mark Briscoe and Jeff pair off. He hits an assisted guillotine leg drop onto Jeff with Jay's help. The Briscoes are just in full control of Rocker with quick tags, double team moves. The Briscoes are just getting smoother and smoother, and they're young here.
So. They look very good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Finally, like, Rocker gets some offense. He does his reverse whip into a Boston Crab, and then Rose just comes in and leg drops him, and then him and Hartog yell at each other. So maybe they're setting up another feud for Rob Hartog now that Rock and Rebel is out of the company.
Yeah, Rocker doesn't look too bad, you know. I thought he looked... This is probably his best match.
Oh, totally. So I totally agree. And I don't think... Danny Rose... I mean, it's just because it's such a thrown-together team that I can't get into them. But Danny Rose seems, like, okay. Like,
yeah,
whenever he's hitting offense, he looks good.
Yeah, like, you know, in the relative world of CZW, you'd say that mid-card jobbers, I guess, these two at the moment.
Yeah. So Rose hits the high knee. I did note here that Rose looks actually a lot better than Rocker. Like, Rose looks like a guy who's been on the indies for, like, the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Sort of toiling away. And then he double chops Jay Briscoe. I like that he hits two hands at once with his chops. Sort of unique. But then Jay Briscoe does a reverse, hits a high angle drop kick. And as he's about to run wild, Rose just cuts him off with a low blow. Like, right in front of the referee. No one cares. Jeff Rocker's in. They continue to build heat on Jay with all of his suplexes that he does. And then finally, Jay hits a big Death Valley driver on Rocker. That'd be a better name, though. And instead of tagging in, he climbs to the second rope, and Rocker just cuts him off and hits his big spin-out powerbomb. That's the one he almost, like, broke a guy's neck with a few shows ago.
Yeah.
Or Kashmir, I believe it was. And then finally, Jay just, like, hits this anticlimactic hot tag to Mark, who runs wild for about 5 seconds before just getting full Nelson suplexed by Jeff Rocker. Rose then grabs a chair as Jeff Rocker's holding back Mark, and in classic CZW fashion, you know what happens.
Yeah, get your bingo cards ready, folks. Get your shots ready, folks.
Danny Rose just smokes Jeff Rocker in the head with this chair.
Yep.
Because Rocker's arms are, like, holding Mark, so he has no way to, like, protect his head at all.
No, yeah, I was very surprised Rocker could move his arms in that motion.
Yeah, and then it sets up Jay for this big senton for the win at 10 minutes and 9 seconds, and that is the win for the Briscoes. So Danny Rose, like, he actually checks on Jeff Rocker here. I thought they might have just done the split here off the loss, but he's like, Jeff, are you all right, buddy? And I'm like, it sort of made my heart warm a bit. And then Rose and Rocker start bullying Hartog, and the Briscoes are so offended, they run back in, and they chase away the heels. And then Dew gets on the mic, and he's mad that the Briscoes are showing any baby face, like, anything at all that's a good guy.
Apparently the commentator's like, oh, Dewey and Wartog have had some beef, and I'm like, I don't remember that, but...
I'm
like,
sure it has happened.
Yeah, it wouldn't... Yeah, I'm...
Well, Dewey used to be a referee, like, under...
Oh, yes, under Rob Hartog. But, yeah, he's, like, mad that he helped, you know, they helped Big Ron.
Or just did anything, like, good.
Yeah.
You know? He's, like, just any babyface behavior offends the Dew.
But is that, it makes sense, actually, to have this be the, because they're going to be the number one contenders for his other team. It actually makes sense.
All of this does.
Relative in, you know, for the writing of CZW to have them split off from Dewey like this.
Well, it is funny because Dewey's like, why would you save this fat piece of shit? And he turns and just smokes Hartog, like, with a punch. And then he's continuing to rant at the Briscoes, and Hartog just picks up a chair and smokes the Dew with a chair.
I cheered.
I did too.
It was a big pop from me.
And the Briscoes sort of shrug their shoulders and they're like, oh, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I guess that's the end of that. That must be the end of the association with them two, which makes sense.
No, not yet. I mean, they come out later. Oh, we'll right. We'll see them. But it's definitely leading that way.
Yeah.
Which, again, long-term booking. I don't mind it. So we cut, and then out first wearing a Destruction in Dover shirt. We remember that show. I'm pretty sure CZW makes shirts for all their individual events, which just must be a crazy loss of money. Like, there's no way.
Mate, yeah. I mean, merch is important, I guess. But, yeah, it's to have individual unique shirts for each one instead of just generic CZW
like,
shirts.
Like, do you remember the main event of the Destruction in Dover?
No, but
we reviewed it, like, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I would like maybe a March Violence shirt or Pyramid of Hell. I'd wear a Pyramid of Hell t-shirt. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we should sell those.
Yeah.
so out is this kid named the Hurricane Kid. And he looks like so small and so skinny. He looks like a strawweight female UFC fighter. He looks just so tiny. And apparently, like, this kid's been ripping up the indie scene. And he's had a feud with his opponent. And they're going to, like, bring their feud to CZW finally. And out comes his opponent, Ruckus, who's, like, he must outweigh him by, like, 250 pounds. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, I like seeing Ruckus, but, yeah, Hurricane Kid is it's such like a child's name. The Hurricane Kid is such like a, yeah, I don't know. It's a very odd name. It does conjure images of a thin, spindly boy.
I feel bad for him because he's in the era of wrestling where like a kid his size would never even get looked at by the WWE. Like they might use him as just a jobber to like feed to like.
Or as like a joke, like wrestler or something.
But it's like, man, this guy. And it wasn't like he was crazy talented either. This was basically like a highlight reel for Ruckus. So they do the Irish whip reverse off, ending with the back suplex to Hurricane from Ruckus, and then right into another reverse off ending in his double handspring elbow. It's all Ruckus. Finally, Hurricane Kid counters. He sends Ruckus outside, hits to the top rope, and he goes for this diving Hurricane Rana you'd see Rey Mysterio do, where he lands onto the guy's shoulders in Hurricane Ranas. But I think he just... I don't know if he overshoots it or undershoots it, but you can see his head just smack off the ground off this. And I don't know, like, the match sort of seemed off from this point. I wouldn't be surprised if he just, like, concussed himself.
Definitely had a concussion, yeah.
Yeah, so he tosses Ruckus a chair and tries to, like, kick it. Ruckus ducks, and then he just hits him in the head twice with a chair. Like, right after I just said he probably is concussed. I'm like, ah, Jesus. And then he does his handspring moonsault to the outside, which the commentators say, Ruckus calls that move the badass. Which he's got a bunch of names for his moves.
Yeah, he does look like a badass when he does it.
That is true.
Yeah.
He always looks like a badass. Ruckus is badass.
Yeah, he is badass, actually, yeah. I mean, he's very, as I said, you know, always gracious to sit, you know, always graceful and things like that. So, I like Ruckus is a fun wrestler to watch.
Definitely. And, like, this was a good, decent opponent for him. In ring, Ruckus counters a dive with a double face buster. Like, he hits one, then picks him up, hits another. And then he hits the rock bottom. Which is straight up just takes the Rock's move, which is pretty cool. He misses a Swanton Bomb, so Hurricane Kid hits another Springboard Hurricane Rana, like the same move he did to the outside. This one looked a bit better. And then an Arabian Moonsault for two. He sends Ruckus outside, hits an Acai Tumbleweed, which, again, Hurricane Kid now is getting all of his flippy shit in. He is looking, like, pretty cool here. But it doesn't look like... It looks like Ruckus would just be able to, like, brush it off like nothing. Like, he's just so much bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Ruckus reverse whips Hurricane Kid into the pole, and then he hits his runway moonsault, which the commentators tell us he calls sweet. That is what he calls the move.
Yeah, it's a good name.
And then Gargiulo's like, why does he call that hit, man? And he's like, because it's just too sweet.
Yeah, that. I mean, it seemed that's a bad thing to do. You can't have too just sweet. You can't call it that. Yeah, you can't just call it sweet because it's too sweet. Like, what do you call this move? Two. He's like, why? It's too sweet. Yeah. Well. This other move's called two.
It like, is a bit silly.
Yeah. I mean, it'll never beat the commentator being called Brett Hitman the House or whatever his full name is. That's absurd. But
yeah. So Ruckus gets a chair. He sets Hurricane Kid on top. Hurricane Kid counters and hits a reverse blockbuster on the chair. So you think Hurricane Kid might have a chance here. He shakes, he gets to the top rope, but Ruckus shakes him into the Tree of Woe. Then he puts the chair in front of his face and hits the Van Terminator, like from one side of the ring to the other, coast to coast. Fucking crazy here that a guy as big as Ruckus is hitting that. He has him beat, hits the two count, and Ruckus pulls his head off the mat. He's like, no, it's not ending that way. And then just for good measure, Ruckus hits a 450 splash on this kid.
That would hurt so much.
It looks like he crushed him.
Yeah, just brutal.
And then he does the cocky pin with one foot on his chest for the win at 10 minutes on the nose. Basically like an extended squash match here.
Yeah,
like,
this didn't need to be 10 minutes.
I agree. Like, Hurricane Kid got a couple cool moves in, but this was just, for ruckus.
Yeah, this was insane. It's insane that it went on for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And these random security guards just lift Hurricane Kid up and like just carry him to the back like a corpse.
Like in Spider-Man, you know, where he's like, careful, he's a hero.
Yeah.
Careful now.
It's the Hurricane Kid.
Yeah.
So we cut. And then we get the Do out first with our tag team champs. We've already seen them in the parking lot. Nate Hatred and Nick Gage. And then out next, the little nameplate says VD because it's Valentine and Dahmer.
Oh, yeah.
You know that's also the name for an STD. Did you know that?
VD?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Venereal disease, essentially.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that. You have more experience in that area.
Hey, now.
In both aspects, you know, in the, yeah.
Well, that's it. It's the first time I ever heard that was that episode of Friends where Joey does like a campaign ad, and it's like, this is the face of VD.
Oh, okay.
And I had to ask my parents, what is VD? And they're like, why are you asking that? I'm like, it was in Friends. But yeah, so they just do it, and Smack, if you remember, is now like managing this team, sort of like unofficially trying to get them into the Hate Club.
Yeah.
And so you realize why they've named them this, because he gets in the ring on the mic, and he's like, I don't know if you fans can tell, but I got a bad case of VD. And everyone just laughs.
Why would you say... I don't understand why you would say that about yourself.
Because, you know, he's Max Mac, dude.
Yeah, I guess it means he has got pussy.
So, dude, if Max Mac ever got pussy, you know everyone at the
everyone would know it. Yeah, for sure.
So we start this match, and I thought they'd done a good job of building VD, or Valentine and Dahmer, up to this point. Given how like shitty a team they are, and like,
yeah,
they gave them the big win. This is sort of their big match, but Dahmer is like starts the match selling this injured shoulder, and I don't remember like them doing it in storyline or anything. So it wouldn't be surprising if you just.
It's from the start of the episode, right? Well, they're outside.
I don't know.
Like, oh, okay.
They never really made that clear, but it looks like a real injury. Like I don't know. Maybe he was just selling it better than.
Yeah.
Maybe he worked me, but. I don't know. It looked like his shoulder was sort of fucked, and it would happen a few times in this match. Plus, Valentine worked the majority of the match, which makes me believe maybe. So anyway, I say that, but John Dahmer started the match with Nate Hatred, and like right away he's just selling his shoulder. Dahmer takes control with a nice clothesline, a suplex, and then Gage runs in, but Valentine cuts him off, and the heels are sent outside to regroup. I love when Do is acting like, no, guys, you got to get it together, like he's giving them advice or whatever. He's just sort of a shitty manager.
Yeah.
Hatred is brawling with Valentine. He hits a sit-out facebuster and then actually lands his bulldog, and it looks pretty nice. And I'm like, man, that's the first time he's ever hit that bulldog, and it doesn't look like shit. Then he hits Valentine with a big power slam. Gage is tagged in, and he's so fired up. I've actually heard this. Like, there was a Jon Moxley shoot interview I saw once where he's like, man, Nick Gage is great, but sometimes when he's, like, too into it, he just, like, he'll just fuck you up and not even realize it.
That doesn't surprise me at all, yeah.
And this looked like one of those times. Like, he is just laying in everything. Then he goes for his choke breaker, where he, like, it's a choke slam backbreaker, and he gets Valentine so high and just drives him into his knee.
Yeah.
Like, there's no working this at all. It looks so brutal. And then he tags in Hatred, who's just blatantly doing his Undertaker choke thing. He pushes the ref aside. The heels are double teamed by antagonizing Dahmer, and he's like trying to get in the ring, and it leads to Gage hitting his boot scraper on Valentine. Valentine comes back with a triple palm strike. That's his big move, is this big palm strike where he's like palm striking through his face. That's how they won the last match to earn this, if you remember.
It is very funny that that's his move.
Yeah.
Just a palm strike.
Eddie Valentine with the palm strike.
Yeah, it just feels a bit ahead of the times to be doing palm strikes in wrestling. I don't know.
Well, it's made famous by Jushin Thunder Liger, but it's like Jushin Liger, Eddie Valentine is not. It's just a random move for him to adopt.
In like CZW as well, it's very like a very strange final move. But fair enough, you do you, mate.
Yeah, so, and this is funny, like, he's going to the top, Valentine's going to the top rope to dive onto Nate Hatred, and Gage just pushes him off the top to the outside, not onto a table or anything, just onto the concrete.
Yeah.
And then he jumps down, grabs a chair, and just smokes Valentine in the head with it, like, so brutally. Dahmer goes for the dive, like, so all three are outside, Hatred, Gage, and Valentine, and Dahmer goes to do that spring up to the top rope and dive. And he clearly loses his balance and sort of just jumps off and then does like a much sloppier just dive onto all three of them. Like a dive you could do. It's like jumping into the pool. Eventually, Valentine makes a chair table outside, and then they double suplex Hatred for it through it. And at this point, the Briscoes just appear ringside. No real rhyme or reason. The commentators just tell you they're there. They don't get involved or anything. Dahmer has the Boston Crab on Nate as Valentine hits a top rope leg drop on the back of his head. And then John goes for the pin, but Gage pops up. And so, Gage is coming in to break it up. So John Dahmer just pops up and hits a spine buster on Gage. This is actually, like, the fans are pretty into it at this point. Like, I thought
the
match was going better than I sort of thought it would. So as they go for the pin on Gage, Hatred pulls the referee away by the feet, hits the Rikishi driver on Valentine, and then he just picks up Dahmer and slams him on the shoulder. And this is where I'm like, Dahmer's selling this like he just got shot in the arm. And it sort of, he was like just yelling like, fuck, fuck, fuck.
Yeah, it does look, it looks real.
It looks really real.
And that's because I just don't trust Dahmer to be that good at anything involving wrestling. So, yeah, it looks real.
And you can tell he's like, that motherfucker, like, he's mad that Hatred just slammed him, like, right on his hurt shoulder. And this allows Gage to hit the frog splash onto Valentine for the win at 10 minutes and 32 seconds. Yeah, I thought better than this match had any right to be.
I thought it was a solid match, for sure. I don't know if it needed to be 10 minutes, but it was still, it was decent enough, for sure. Yeah. Like, more than you expect out of a Dharma match.
Yeah, definitely. Or Valentine, or Hatred.
I mean, for sure. Only Nick Gage is maybe the good one in that group. Yeah.
Yeah. So then afterwards, the Briscoes get in, and they're sort of like staring down Gage and Hatred, and Hatred is they're staring each other down, and the fans are chanting, fuck them up, Briscoes, fuck them up. It's like coming to a boil, and then finally Dew gets in the middle. He's like, come on, guys, pose together. And they all pose together, raise each other's arms. Made me want to see the match. I gotta say,
long-term storytelling, mate.
This was good booking.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be the match. I presume they'll put the belts on the Briscoes at some point. So.
And if they can have this good a match with Dahmer and Valentine, imagine the Briscoes. Like,
with good wrestlers, I know. It's going to be wild.
So then we get our cut, and out first is Trent Acid in the match that the announcer says is to determine the best junior heavyweight in CZW. That's just a term they kept using on this show.
Yeah, because they are like, is he the best? And Trent Acid's like not wrong in that. He's like, well, I have beaten everyone. I mean, I guess with some circumstances involved, but also like he's beaten a lot of people. Like, he probably is the best.
Well, and the commentators make note here of something that I never realized, is that Trent Acid apparently lost their junior heavyweight title to someone in Japan.
So the reason
that none of these matches are for that title is because it's no longer in the company. So instead of just having a title to prove who's the best, they just say, like...
That's insane to have not made any mention, like, briefly, to not know that that's going on with the title in a CZW is insane.
Or you just have to, like, listen to the commentary. But the live crowd would have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So next out is... and I want to say, Trent comes out full, like, he's looking as jacked as he ever has.
Looks good.
He's looking good. He's dancing to the ring. I'm like, man, this guy's got charisma.
This guy rules.
This guy is a star.
Yeah.
And then out next is Reckless Youth. And I'm like, man, this guy is not a star.
No, he's just a bit of a charisma vacuum, I'd say.
He
Reckless
looks like
Youth.
An English teacher. He looks like just so unappealing.
Should have gone to the UK with Zandig.
Yeah. And then finally, Outlast is the People's Champion, Rick Blade.
Yes.
They call him our franchise player every time. And I'm like, man, the fans are so into this guy every time. It's crazy.
Yeah, if only he could cut a promo, he'd be unstoppable.
Honestly. Dude, if he had any charisma at all, he'd be like, a much probably more successful wrestler.
Yeah. I mean, I love his drip. Like, it's insane, his clothes, like tribal stuff and CZW and all that over it. So he loves the brand, the company, which is great.
He reps it.
Yeah, it's just not, I don't know, just when you see him compared to Trent Acid, you're just like, that's a star, and that's Rick Blade.
Totally, I agree. And it's funny, because so the announcer announces this as a three-way elimination match, and immediately the commentator's like, what's he talking about? This isn't an elimination, this is one fall to a finish. And so we're left, like, not knowing if it's going to be elimination or one fall to a finish. We will figure out during this match. And then they do their stupid fucking gimmick of, since Rick Blade won the coin toss in the back, he gets 2 minutes of off time. And again,
so I
don't know how you win a three-way coin toss.
Yeah, it's so strange.
Doesn't make sense at all. So we get the three-way match. And as soon as the bell rings, Acid's doing his gimmick where he leaves the ring. He's sauntering around. Which, if you think about the gimmick of the match, makes sense. Like, you would just want to burn off the first 2 minutes. So like,
yeah, and that's why it makes even less sense to be like, give 2 minutes off. Because... Yeah,
both guys should just agree not
to do anything. Yeah, just don't do anything for 2 minutes. It's such a strange stipulation at the start.
Yeah. So Reckless Youth and Acid are exchanging forearms finally in the ring. Then they have their reverse off, ends with Acid down. Blade waves his bye time. Like, it's like less than a minute into the match, and he just decides to come in, and he does his forward. I don't know how to call this move, but it's so sick. Like, he doesn't springboard off the top rope and do a moonsault or, like, a 450.
Yeah.
He just, like, launches his body and rolls over and lands.
It looks good.
Like a forward moonsalt. It looks awesome.
The camera angle's sort of, like, at the ringside as well in, like, a proper in the corner. So you can see him kind of, like, leaping over the camera. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then both Reckless Youth and Acid are outside after this, so he hits this insane corkscrew off the top rope to both guys.
Yeah, it's a crazy good match straight away.
Mm-hmm. Although it's weird, off this landing, Blade just looks like he's injured. Like, he looks like he might have fucked his leg up or whatever. And you can see the ref run out and ask him, and he's just like, oh, I'll just fucking power through it or whatever. There's a good chance he just injured himself, like, right off the bat here. Just,
yeah.
Like, it really gets, like, grinds to a halt. And they go back in the ring. Reckless Youth and Acid go at it. Reckless Youth slams Acid off the second rope, and then Blade is just back in the ring. So I'm like, okay, he's all right. He locks in the STF, and then Acid drop kicks him in the face. Reckless Youth hits the Divorce Court arm breaker on Acid, then he arm drags Blade. Wait, you like that name?
Yeah,
the
Divorce Court arm breaker. That's so sick.
And then Eric Argiulo even yells, it's not separated, it's divorced.
that's such a great name for a move, the Divorce Court arm breaker.
Yeah. This match is just like nonstop. Like, they're just hitting all sorts of crazy shit. Blade hits this huge Hurricane Rana on Acid, and then he turns around, he spin kicks Reckless Youth. They tumble outside, allowing Acid to moonsault both of them. Notice it. Acid hasn't done the moonsault in ages. I think he's, like, progressed past, you know, when he
getting
pulls
his ass out.
His ass.
Yeah.
He's a different wrestler now.
He is, for sure. He matured.
Mm-hmm. In the ring, they set up the Tower of Doom, where Blade is going to superplex Acid, and then Reckless Youth comes up and just sunset powerbombs Blade, leading to the suplex. It looked pretty sick.
Mm.
Reckless Youth and Blade are back to the top, and then Reckless Youth hits a super tornado DDT to Blade, which just looked fucking dangerous. I don't know how you protect your head on that.
No.
But it looked really impressive. Acid and Reckless Youth block each other's finisher, then Reckless Youth climbs to the top, and Acid pushes the ref into the ropes, hits his Acid Bomb on Reckless Youth, and then Blade breaks the pin. And at that point, I'm like, okay, well, then this must not be an elimination match. It must be a single, because why would Blade break that up?
Yeah, I mean, although you never know, I guess, like, if they even know what sort of match it is.
If
like,
they've even been told.
Yeah, they're just like, well, I can't let him win by pinning, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, then all of a sudden, Zabar, and if you remember the towel boy from last week, I think he's the guy who beat Johnny Cashmere.
Oh, yeah.
With all of his towel-based offense. They appear, and Blade hits his sky-high sort of, like, German moonsault facebuster thing to Acid, Blade is on the top, hits a shooting star press on Acid, which he nearly misses. Blade should really not be hitting a shooting star press, because he just doesn't get, like, the air.
Especially if he's got a gammy leg at the moment, which he probably does.
Yeah, exactly. And then, as he's going for the pin, Zabar and Towelboy attack Rick Blade. So Reckless Youth appears, hits the 2K bomb on Zabar, which is essentially like a brain buster where he crosses their legs. It's a really impressive looking move. And Zabar just fucking gets wiped out here. Meanwhile, the Towel Boy is choking Blade as Acid hits the Acid Bomb on Reckless Youth for this cheap pin at 14 minutes and 6 seconds. I thought that was Acid winning the match. And then that's when the announcer is like,
no, it's
Reckless Youth has been eliminated.
Yeah,
for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? How do you not like get on the same page there? But it would end up being a great thing for this match.
100%, yeah.
So it comes down to Blade and Acid, and they're brawling outside towards the garage door. Blade just slams Acid into this garage door. And then it's like he clearly planned this ahead of time because he just knows what button to press, and the garage door starts raising.
Yeah.
He must have just been talking.
You say garage doors, but this would be to let out firefighters going to an emergency.
Yeah, it's a massive door.
Yeah.
It's letting a giant fire truck out, yeah.
It's just funny to imagine it. Normally, it's like they're going to save lives, and here it's just like, we really need to batter each other outside.
Yeah, what would happen if there was a fire like in the city during
there
this
There must
show?
Be. There'd hopefully be another fire station, or to be honest, the fire would probably be happening at the wrestling match.
Yeah, that's true, which almost did happen last time. So Blade sets up a table outside onto the concrete as the fans are just pouring out to watch this.
Yeah.
And then Blade climbs up on just the highest, like a semi-truck. It's so high up.
It's a comically large truck. I don't think I've ever, like, it's like a proper American, like, 18-wheeler truck. Like,
yeah.
It just looks absurd.
I was gonna ask if you think this is higher than the roof that he jumps off in at the Champs Arena.
I don't think it is it's higher than any truck should be.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as high as that, but I think it's, like, Yeah, it's just an absurdly large truck. I don't understand.
Well, and it's also the fact that they're outside. Like, this is literally just concrete.
Yeah, and this is like a real truck. And yeah, I don't. This is very strange. I mean, it's awesome, but I was just like, that looks like a prop truck. Like, yeah. It doesn't look like a real truck, but I think it is real.
Well, yeah, I would assume so. And so I'm like, there's no way. Like, this is a crazy, insane, like, the spot they're setting up is so dangerous with acid laid out on the table. And so acid jumps off the table, and then I'm like, okay, they're not doing it. And he climbs up on the truck to fight Blade. Blade just kicks him in the face. They fight him back down.
Yeah, because he's like, at one point, acid's like hanging on, like, at the end of Die Hard. And he's like, Blade's like stamping on his feet and stuff like that. Yeah, because the way they've set up the table is like, there is physics involved in a move like this where you're jumping off and trying to land, because you're not going to go, like, if he was just jumping straight down, you'd be like, oh, okay. But clearly Blade's like, I'm going to get air and go forward. I'm just,
it's
like,
so far away.
Yeah,
from the truck.
Like, this is so, this looks like there's no way this is ending with both people alive.
Well, I thought Acid was jumping up just so they could reset the table, because it might have been too far or something.
Yeah, but they're like, nah.
But they don't. They fight him back down. He puts Acid back on the table.
Yeah.
He goes back to the top of the truck. He hits a flawless Swanton bomb.
Thank God.
Nails
yeah,
the target.
It's perfect. Like, yeah, it is incredible.
It might have been the coolest Rick Blade Swanton we've seen. Like, just with the setting and off the truck or whatever. It was fucking wild.
And landed it perfectly. Like, it's insane. Like, it's crazy that it works as well as it does. But I guess it's just, it's great.
Yeah. No, really, really cool. Both guys are down for a while, and I don't think this is selling.
I think both of them are fucked. Yeah,
yeah, they probably really hurt both of them. I mean, imagine just Acid taking that. There's no way to fake like just the momentum.
The adrenaline as well going through like Blade. Like when you're just lying on the floor and you've got a moment to gather yourself, you'd just be like, "Holy fuck, why am I doing this?" Like,
yeah, I can't wait for that $300 at the end of this night.
Yeah, it just feels like they'd have constant post nut clarity where they're just both like, "This is, what are we doing?"
And so Blade, Fireman carries Acid back to the ring. But then the camera shows the referee who's doing the slowest 10 count ever. And right when they're near...
Yeah, that is very funny. How long has he been counting the 10? Because they were out there for like a long time.
5 minutes.
Yeah. And he's just like, 9! I'm like, bro, no chance.
Yeah, so then right when they're near the ring, he does 10.
Yeah.
And this match ends on a double count out at 19 minutes and 45 seconds.
Blade tries to do a count himself, though.
Yes, he throws him back in and then does a 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and they're like, no, it doesn't count.
Of course it doesn't, Blade. Yeah. You're not a referee. So yeah, Blade gets on the mic and he's like, I didn't come here for a count out. And he calls out Acid for 5 more minutes. And then Acid, I mean, just showing how dumb this audience is. He's like, you guys want 5 more minutes? You want 5 more minutes? He's like, well, fuck all of you.
Yeah.
But they were so ready that they thought he was going to accept it.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool, though. I like that. That's
good heel.
Acid rules, yeah.
Yes. And yeah, fuck you assholes. I'm out of here. And I just thought this match was great.
Yeah.
Even with the Reckless Youth part, I thought the pace was good. The reversals were good. It felt nonstop. And then with the big fucking finish.
Yeah, like Trent, obviously you said about Trent Acid being a star, but Reckless Youth and Rick Blade are solid wrestlers. They just have charisma or whatever. So, yeah, it was a great match throughout, I thought. And like deserving of its length. Like,
yeah, totally.
For the first time in the show, probably. But yeah, great stuff. In like an insane spot, like to finish it. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I was like, oh man, that's like main event worthy for sure. So I was like excited for what was coming next.
Yeah. So Blade then grabs Zabar, hits the Michinoku driver on him, and he's like, the bar's been here for every one of my last few matches. Clearly, he wants to be in the front seat, so let's give him the best seat in the house. Handcuffs him to like the ring post in the corner. And so Zabar is just going to be there for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
Man, it's like such a whipping boy position. I would hate to be the whipping boy of CZW. Like, just such a bad position.
Yeah, because you're going to take, like, light tubes to the head and shit like that.
And Zabar does this hilarious thing. So his hands are cuffed in front of him in the pole. And he gets in the ring and slides to the other side and realizes he's just still handcuffed.
Yeah, he's stuck. I imagine they're real handcuffs as well. They're joke handcuffs.
Yeah, no, it was very funny. And yeah, so then the camera stays on Zabar as he looks sad, and we cut. And then the fans, or they sort of announce, out comes Jimmy Washington for the Cavalcade of Stars.
No, he's introduced as Pastor Jim again.
Yeah, but he's dressed as a cowboy.
Yeah, that's what I mean, but it's just weird. Like, they're not, it's like, they keep switching. Like, I was on board with Jimmy Washington, But now Pastor Jim's back. It's like, why?
But he's
I hate this.
It's fucking awful. And then he says, with his personal fluffer, Natasha.
Gross.
Really just gross, yeah.
Gross.
And so Jim just starts the segment outside. And mercifully, this is the shortest cavalcade of stars we've had. So he's blaming Zabar for booking Johnny Cashmere on his show the last 2 weeks. Because he's like, you're basically Zandig, so you do the booking. And it's just like, I don't know, like, apparently he's also anti-Zandig, even though he's, like, clearly a heel. Like, this segment just fucking sucks.
Yeah, I hate it.
I really hate it. And then Cashmere just appears out of nowhere, grabs the mic from Jim, and bitch slaps him. And
yeah,
that's the end of Jim for this segment.
Yeah, Cashmere as well is dressed like, you know, the Game Boy SP that had the tribal... at the tribal, he looks like that specialist. Like, he's so 2000s coded with his, like, he's got a white shirt on, like, tribal. Like, he's just like, dressed for a sleepover, and it's insane that he just wrestles like that.
He looks like he'd be in CKY with Bam Margera, like, skateboard tricks.
Yeah, insane, yeah, yeah.
He looks like Rab himself, if you know that reference.
Yeah, like, I can imagine him as a fisheye camera.
Yeah, exactly. So he says, I came all the way here to Delaware, and I'm not even fucking booked. I've been killing myself, and no one appreciates it. This time is real, and I quit. And the commentator's like, this is the second time he's quit in, like, 8 months or whatever. It really is just, like, I mean, you know comedy enough at this point when you see the person make a public thing of quitting comedy.
Yeah.
And then within 4 months, they're like, I've been missing it. I'm back,
baby.
It's like, you were never, like, no one gives a fuck. Like,
yeah.
This is just lame.
Yeah, I've been quitting every week.
Yeah.
What you mean is you're just not getting booked.
Yes, exactly. So then you cue Justice Payne, and he walks in with a guitar, just with light bulbs,
it's
like,
so
taped
sick.
To it on the back, like at least a dozen light bulbs.
I love, yeah, I love when the weapons are just, like, just something from Dead Rising.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
And he looks shiny and juiced today. He's so oily,
extra juicy.
He is oiled up, like he's ready for a bodybuilding competition.
Him and Jeff Rocker have been seeing the same guy.
Yeah, they've got the same barrel of baby oil in the back.
And so. Justice Payne gets the mic. And by the way, that's Cashmere gone. He just walks to the back.
Mm.
So Justice Payne gets the mic, and he says, you know, it's sad. Wife Beater isn't here tonight. And this is clearly, like, him breaking the news to the fans who are, like, sort of seem devastated.
I was devastated.
He's like, his right shoulder's broken. This is the truth. This isn't bullshit. This is a shoot. He's really hurt. And for you guys to boo really fucking sucks. So he starts shaming the fans, given that they just found out, like, their favorite star isn't here.
Yeah.
And they boo. And he's like, however, you'll still have this match. I don't need a partner. And then Justice Payne goes on. He calls Cashmere back out here, and he's like, you're not leaving, man, because Zandig fucking sucks. Don't quit for that guy. He just takes up space in this company. And then Cashmere grabs the mic, and moments after quitting, he's like, you know what? I might not be able to fill Wife Beater's shoes, but I'm going to be your tag team partner tonight. It's like, well, dude, you suck. Just stop fake quitting. And then, literally, as Justice Payne and Cashmere's hands meet, Cut My Life into Pieces. Papa Roach begins playing, and it was fucking perfect timing. As we get our Fans Bring the Weapons match, Justice Payne and Johnny Cashmere versus Nick Mondo and Jun Kasai. And this is fucking, like, I was so excited for this match.
Yeah,
Mondo,
sure.
And Jun Kasai might be my favorite tag team I've ever seen.
Yeah, because we... Mondo hasn't wrestled for a while, right, as well, so it's the first time seeing him back.
Not since he brutally injured himself in his last match.
Yeah, because the commentators were like, I'm returning Mondo, so...
Yeah, yeah, well, we saw him return and join the big deals. I forget if he had a match that night, but this is his first, like, ultra-violent match back. And then Justice Payne, before the match even starts, he's like, I know all you crazy motherfuckers got weapons, but I don't think it's enough, so production, bring us what you got. And they bring out one giant plywood board of barbed wire that looks insane, and then another giant plywood board of just light tubes, which looks even crazier.
Because they start, it's pretty sick actually, because like, you just see them like just putting light tubes against the ring and like setting up shit, and you just like
security is just taking weapons from fans
and just
filling
them,
the ring.
Yeah,
with them.
Just putting them, lining them up. Like there's like a montage before the match starts of like. Yeah, just the security just being like, yeah, we want them dead, so we're going to put all these weapons out there.
Yes. No, this, like, it just had the look of, like, a dangerous match.
Yeah, for sure. This is why we started this podcast, to see these sorts of matches.
Absolutely. I was very excited. So Kasai and Justice Payne start brawling. Justice Payne gets the advantage and just quickly breaks a tube on Kasai's head. And then Kasai hits a tornado DDT just on this broken glass that just broke. I don't, there's no way to fake that. You're just taking glass on the top of your head. Like, right away, I'm like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Mondo breaks a submission that Justice Payne has, leading to Kashmir and Mondo exchanging. Both teams regroup on the outside, and then they all get light tubes and square off like they're having a sword fight.
Yeah, like something from Star Wars.
Yeah, so the faces just both duck swings at the same time, and then they break their tubes over the heels and then pick up more ones and just break light tubes on the heels' backs. At this point, the match is just already crazy. We're like a minute or two
there's
into it.
Powder. There is... I still think it's asbestos in those light tubes.
Yeah.
There is dangerous chemicals floating about in the air.
When the announcer is picking up the microphone, he's like, fans, please cover your eyes. Yeah, please step back and cover your eyes.
Yeah, this is insane. Light tubes being popped everywhere. Every now and then, it's very funny. You'll just see the ref trying to like desperately sweep up.
Yeah.
Like imagine being on the Titanic and trying to like throw buckets of water. That's what it's like. You'll sweep up and then just immediately someone else will use a light tube.
Just more glass.
Yeah, light bulbs. Because it's just light bulbs as well. Just actual light bulbs. Like, it's insane.
Well, they're outside and Nick Mondo picks up a golf club that's got like four light bulbs like taped to the end of it.
Yeah,
and he just smacks Justice Payne on the back with his golf club light like light bulb thing, and they all break, and then Justice Payne just no-sells it, throws Mondo into the sea of chairs at this fucking spot. So Kasai's outside, Justice Payne holds him against the apron with a bundle of like six light tubes in front of his face, and Johnny Kashmir just baseball slides the light tube bundle into his face.
It's so sick. it is incredible. Like, they're...
It was fucking wild, man.
Yeah, it was. That was, that is one of maybe one of my favorite spots from all of it, because you're just like, this is so... you wouldn't see that on any other... Like, genuinely, I don't need to see that on many other wrestling shows, because that is so... He just is against his face. Like,
not like, even the top of his head.
No,
like
just
nose and his eyes.
Yeah, because the thing about light tubes is wherever you get hit, like, you can get hit anywhere and it looks cool. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be hitting them in the face like sometimes you do with the chair shot or whatever to make it look cool. So they're just like putting it on their face and then he just perfectly slides and just it just explodes.
And Justice Payne lets go of it at the very last second because he knows it's about to like hit his hands or whatever.
Yeah, it's a crazy spot to do. Absolutely
insane. And it's right
insane.
Off the, like, again, the first couple minutes, like right off the bat.
You're just like, this is crazy. This is wild.
Mm-hmm. So then they're brawling outside. Justice Payne and Kasai sort of split up from Mondo and Kashmir. And so Justice Payne lights four light tubes just on the concrete and snap suplexes Kasai onto them. Kasai is taking so much damage here. Like,
his back is bleeding immediately.
Already, yeah. And it's funny because the camera isn't going back and forth between the two pairs. So they're focused on Justice Payne and Kasai, but you can hear like glass breaking and just like shit breaking from Mondo and Kashmir on the other side. It's pretty
background
wild.
Background noise.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, Justice Payne picks up like a window, like something you'd see in like a door, like the four sort of panel
window.
Yeah,
French door patio door.
And just smashes it on Kasai's back. It makes
so
an insane
bad.
Noise. Yeah, Justice Payne makes a chair table. Finally, Kasai gets some offense and back bodies him through his own chair table, of course. And then the camera moves over to Mondo and Kashmir. As Kashmir just takes another giant light tube bundle of about six or eight tubes and destroys it on Nick Mondo's ribs. Like, his arms were up. There's just no way to protect himself.
Yeah.
Fucking wild. Everyone but Kashmir here at this point is drenched in blood.
Yeah.
And I assume Kashmir's bleeding, but he's just wearing his, like, white shirt. Like,
yeah, it's pretty crazy, though. He's wearing what you think... I don't know. I just
bleed through.
Yeah, be bleeding through, maybe. Yeah, but crazy.
Yeah, but, like, as far as Justice Payne, Mondo, and
their
backs
bloody.
Are just torn to shreds already. They get in the ring, and Mondo back elbows a chair into Kashmir's face. Then he picks up an ironing board, which I thought was crazy, and just suplexes Kashmir onto it, which is probably more brutal than it sounds. Then he sets a light tube bundle in the corner. This is one of my other favorite spots of the match. So he puts it, like, I don't know how he got it to stay up, almost like he attached it to the ring pole somehow. Mm. And then Kashmir reverses his Irish whip, and he springs to the top rope to do a counter. And Mondo just shoves him ass first through the light tube bundle, just over the top rope.
It's crazy.
And he just explodes all the light tubes and falls to the outside. It's fucking wild spot here. Justice Payne and Kasai take over the ring as Justice Payne just beels Mondo on the outside right after this. Hits Kasai with a huge belly-to-belly. Kasai comes back with a German suplex, a big implant DDT. Justice Payne no-sells it, just super kicks Kasai. There's no room for selling in this match either.
No, you just because you just getting you're just moving on to the next bundle of light tubes.
They're going a mile a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Justice Payne's just like Kasai gets him on the apron, and then out of nowhere, Mondo's just back in and he sunset flips over the top rope, puts Justice Payne through that barbed wire board that you didn't even see there until he hits it. This is fucking crazy. Both guys are just like in it. And then Justice Payne, again, just no sells it, comes back up and powerbombs Mondo onto a chair table that just happened to be there.
Yeah.
It's almost like production is just setting up shit.
I think they probably are getting tables out for them and shit.
Yeah. So Justice Payne and Kashmir double team. Oh, man, this is another just fucking crazy spot. So you see them like both lifting up Kasai for a double powerbomb.
Mm.
And I'm like, he's going over the top rope. As soon as they get him up, I'm like, yeah, they're chucking him over. And then as soon as they get to the edge where they're going to chuck him, you see that light tube board that I'd mentioned.
Yeah, it's got duct tape light tubes on them and shit.
At least a dozen tubes just on this plywood. And they just fucking beel him over the top, powerbomb him through this board.
Insane.
He lands on like his neck and shoulder just on the light tubes as they explode. Just another fucking crazy spot here. He's bleeding so much more now that like Kasai's bleeding so much more
it's
than
like
the other
top
three.
Of his head, his back, everywhere is bleeding.
Yeah. Mondo hangs up Justice Payne on the top rope, like in the middle of the ring, and then he manages to like balance that ironing board on his back. Hits his tumbleweed leg drop and smashing the ironing board. Kashmir manages to save it at two. Kashmir hits a cradle breaker on Mondo in the ring, takes him outside, lays him on the barbed wire board, and then jumps to the top rope. Before he does, he takes his shirt off because he's like, fuck it, I'm going to cut my body up too.
Yeah.
He goes for like a 180 senton, and Mondo's just not there. Kashmir wipes out onto the barbed wire board. He gets thrown back in the ring. Kasai... But by the way, as this is happening, the camera pans to Kasai, and there's just this random ring crew guy duct taping his arm up because his arm is like gushing blood in like a dangerous way.
So yeah, it is really. It looks sick, but it's also so dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And so as Kasai enters the ring, Trent Acid of all people appears at ringside, throws Kashmir back in the ring, and Kasai just pins him flat at 16 minutes and 21 seconds. The big deals get the win here. What a fucking crazy match, man. This is one of my favorite matches we've seen in CZW.
Yeah, just everything about it was perfect. Like, there was moves, so there was violence. There was, like, yeah, it was actual wrestling in
just
it.
Just gore.
Everyone put their bodies on the line. You'd not see shit like this at any other wrestling thing. Like, this is the sort of match where someone's, like, importing a video in 2001 being like, bro, you've got to see this. What they're doing in America, this is insane. Like, yeah, I can absolutely see this match being something that, like, makes people care about CZW. Because it's just, some of those spots were so wild. Like,
yeah, man.
Just, I can't get over just putting light tubes on someone's head and then just sliding into it.
Or when he just pushes Kashmir through the tubes off the top rope. Like, there's just no way to protect yourself.
Yeah, I mean,
fucking awesome.
A hell of a double bill. Like, this entire episode could have just been these two matches that we've seen back to back.
Yeah, definitely.
They're both so good. But yeah, just absolutely crazy. Like, full respect to everyone involved. Even Kashmir, who I've not been the kindest about. But yeah, he really, you know, kind of put himself out there.
Well, and he probably legitimately was a last second replacement. Like, I bet, like, or at least, like, they probably knew Wifebeater was injured when he got injured. But they're like,
can you imagine if Wifebeater had been in this match, though? Like, how much gnarlier it would have been. Like,
for sure.
Yeah, that dude put a lot. Remember when he put a lobster down his pants? Like, that. I'm almost sad that Wifebeater wasn't in it. Even as good as it was, it would have been absolutely psychotic.
Yeah, definitely. So then Mondo, like, after the match, he goes to hit Kashmir with a light tube. And Justice Payne just appears with that light bulb guitar we brought up at the beginning and destroys it. Like, all 12 light bulbs just explode on Mondo's back as he, like, is just
so
chucked
funny
out
that
of the
it
ring.
Was a guitar. Could have been anything with, like, but yeah, just a guitar, I guess.
One of the commentators was like, Jeff Jarrett never had one of those. And then he hits Kasai with a light tube. And then this is the funniest part. So Kashmir and Justice Payne get Kasai isolated in the ring, and he's still got that monkey tail we mentioned off the beginning.
Yeah.
And so they douse the monkey tail in lighter fluid and light it on fire, and Kasai, literally like a cartoon, runs out of the ring with his ass on fire.
It's wild it survived the match, that tail.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just set it on fire, and like, that's really dangerous. I mean, it's funny, but like, yeah, they just set that thing
runs
on fire.
He runs all the way to the entrance, and then you see Kasai rip his pants off.
Yeah.
He's just, like, attached to his
dude's
trunk.
Very funny. Like, yeah, he is great.
Yeah, and then they play the babyface music. And for the first time in CZW, they do like extreme replays where it would show you the move and then it would show you it in slow motion. And it really does make you appreciate just how fucking brutal this stuff is.
Yeah, because after the replays, they also cut to like in the back room where like they're just getting treated on.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is so gnarly, bro.
You can tell the medics are so unimpressed by it all, too. Like,
yeah.
There's just these, like, they seem like kind women. Maybe they're, like, wives of the wrestler or something. One of the medics is wearing a CZW shirt, so I don't know how professional they are.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know how on earth you treat it, really. You'd be like, where do I start?
They look at Kasai, and they're just wiping his back, and she's like, we need water, we need more water here. The fan, they just see wrestlers that are, like, applauding them for, like, the show they just put on. And then they focus in on Jun Kasai's elbow, and you can see, like, the muscle from his arm. He's just got this gash.
Yeah, I don't know how he got that, when that was.
It's probably the light tube fucking
board,
like, just getting chucked outside. But I don't know. It looks so fucking gnarly and gross.
Yeah, it's so gross. But also, this is why we started watching the CZW.
You hear the medic saying, like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And then at one point, they've got, like, anesthetic, and they're just wiping this yellow shit all over him. They're like, this is really going to hurt. And Kasai just completely no-sells it. Like,
yeah, that's so funny, yeah. You just, like, you must be, I don't know, like, the pain from that, just you must just be like,
Adrenaline must be worn off. I just imagine your first shower after that, man. That would fucking kill.
Yeah, they must be, yeah, absolutely crazy. There is no wonder they all drink a lot and take a lot of drugs. Like, there's no, like, I don't understand how you'd even keep going. But
Kasai is on the hot sake tonight.
Hot sake, yeah, crazy.
So then they check on Mondo after, and you hear the medic say, you're surprisingly not too bad. He's got, like, little punctures all over his back. But compared to Kasai could see, like, these two long cuts, in parallel across his back. Like, Kasai got so fucked up in this match. And then you hear them, like, you can't see Pondo, but you hear them ask Pondo off camera. It's like, you're going to be able to follow that, Pondo? And he's just like, no fucking way, man. He's like, Kasai is the man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just
and
funny.
He's right.
Yeah, they did not follow
they did. They were not able to follow it, yeah.
So we cut, and then we come back, and it's just panning around the ring of barbed wire. And for maybe the first time in CZW, like, this is actual real deal, like, barbed wire ropes.
It looks really cool.
It's not like the single strand like they usually do that you, like, break it if you're Irish whipped into it. This looks like thick barbed wire strands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're playing The Great American Nightmare by fucking Rob Zombie as they're just showing the barbed wire ring. So
yeah, I knew you recognized it.
I was into that.
Yeah.
And then Madman Pondo's out first, and he enters with a stop sign. And he's, like, gingerly entering the ring. Like, he doesn't even want to touch this wire because you can tell it's, like, real barbed wire.
Yeah, it looks grim.
And then Lobo is out next wearing a G.I. Joe shirt.
Yeah, it's very funny what they're wearing because Pondo looks like he's wearing, I don't know if you've seen Naruto, but there's, like, an evil organization in it.
Yeah,
and it looks like the red icon from that. And I'm like, is he wearing... I was like, no, because it wasn't out at that point, but he looks like he's wearing that Naruto shirt.
It's a Juggalo jersey.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah, Naruto, Juggalo, same thing. But yeah, I was just like... These guys are such dorks.
Yeah, no, they both are.
They're
such
both
dorks.
Fucking dweebs, man.
Well, in the storyline, if you remember when Lobo cut that awful promo last week, they're like, Lobo paid for this match himself. He paid Pondo's flight ticket. He paid for the barbed wire.
What money does Lobo have?
No money.
Yeah, yeah.
He has like three shirts.
Yeah, yeah. G.I. They're all references.
So we get a Iron Man Championship, no rope barbed wire ladder match, by the way. The Iron Man title is hanging from the top of the arena. And I was like, okay, let's see what these guys have in store. Because if I'm these guys watching that match, it's like when you're doing a comedy show and the guy before you just lights the room on fire, like murders it.
Yeah, they literally murdered and lit a man on fire. So.
And you're like, there's no way I can like,
yeah,
this.
You are just like, yeah, I'm just going to go. Like, yeah. What's the point?
Yeah, so Pondo begins the match outside and then he grabs a microphone and asks the crowd, did you miss me? Well, me and Lobo, we're two sick, crazy bastards. We're about to put on a show. And it's just like, all right, just put on the show, dude.
Yeah,
the
I'm already like, no, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I just saw Jun Kasai go through a light tube board.
Yeah.
And so they tie up. They start, like, teasing, throwing each other into the wire. Then it's, like, it's so weird. So they're tying up, and then they have, like, a chat, Like, they whisper in each other's ears, and they both run outside and start throwing chairs and, like, a table into the ring and stuff. And you can tell they're trying to do this vibe of, like, well, we're the sick main eventers, so we can sort of, like, call our own shots. None of this worked for me. I thought it was all, like, very lame.
It's really, like, it's such deflating experience as well.
And it literally was, I don't know if this would be half as bad if we didn't see the match we just saw. Like, if this match was literally won before it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know. I still think this is just a bad match. Like,
I agree, yeah.
Like, I it doesn't help that it's after an absolute banger, you know, a 6 stars. But, yeah, it was just like, this is nuts. Like, this is, why are you doing this? This is so, it's just so boring. Like,
yeah.
If you were following it as well, you'd at least surely know. And if your whole thing is you sick freaks, you wouldn't then just be friends.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what sick freaks do.
Well, so they build a ladder table together, putting a ladder on 2 chairs.
Yeah.
And then they sort of counter around it before Lobo does hit, like, a Death Valley driver onto Pondo, onto the ladder, which did look fucking awful.
Like, yeah, it does, but but also, like, not compared to what we've just seen.
Totally.
Like, it's not, like, put a gun on it or something. Like, a knife on it. Yeah. Just stab him.
When it looks like Pondo allows him to do it too, like, it all looks so choreographed, and I know that sounds silly, but it just does. It looks like, oh yeah, they agreed that he's gonna do that move on him.
Yeah, they should be like eating barbed wire or just doing mad shit. If you are the guys who are doing this, and you just come from this, putting someone through a ladder, that's not sick freak stuff. Like, that's not you know.
Yeah, you're right, the ladder should be on fire.
The ladder should be on fire. It should have syringes on it.
It's covered in lobsters.
Yeah, it's covered in VD. Like, yeah, put loads of shit into it. This is, yeah, it's just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, exactly. They both climb the ladder at the same time, which I hate when wrestlers, it doesn't make sense.
It's
barely under the title. And then the ladder sort of just sloppily falls over. Pondo doesn't even hit the wire, and Lobo sort of, like, throws his body into it. It's meant to be, like, them both hitting into it. Again, sort of lame. And then Lobo sets up the ladder again, climbs it, and at this point, Pondo pushes it over, and Lobo crotches himself on the top rope wire, which that does look fucking brutal.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The fans actually do a holy shit chant at that. Maybe the worst spot of the match. Pondo's outside. He makes a giant chair table, like a double-decker one, and then he grabs this light tube stop sign. Like, a stop sign would just, like, it looks like they cut light tubes in half. Like, it's, like, 4 halves of a light tube.
Yeah.
And then they go in the ring. He grabs a pair of scissors and just cuts Lobo's forehead open with it. And it looks just like a shoot. Like, it looks like he just cut his head open with scissors.
Yeah. I mean, that's, at least we've got some sick freak business going on now.
Yeah. He tries to get on the apron. And it's funny because you can see Pondo wants to go on the apron and suplex Lobo onto the chair table. But the wire's so legitimately sharp, he can't, like, use it to get himself up. And Pondo's so, like, out of shape and unathletic, he can't just, like, he just can't get on the apron.
Yeah.
So Lobo essentially has to, like, help him onto the apron.
Yeah.
And then suplex himself as they they both go through this, like, chair table. This match is, like, falling apart.
It's embarrassing, yeah, this match.
It looked really bad.
Yeah.
In the ring, it's so funny to imagine these guys listening to this because they just destroyed their bodies.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This is shit.
Yeah, fuck you for making me watch this. You guys suck.
Well, and we should say this is at, like, 2 hours and 15 minutes. Yeah. So we're also just
tired.
Fatigued.
Yeah.
From
If anything, we've put our bodies through much worse things than those wrestlers have, I'd say.
Yeah, Lobo hangs Pondo on the wire, like, by belly first, and then he has a guillotine leg drop off the ladder, which looks all right. And then Lobo goes to climb the ladder, but Pondo just power bombs him off. Again, you can see these moves coming, like, a mile away because they're both so slow. You'd think these two would be good together, sort of, because they have similar styles. And you realize, like, no, they're not good together because they're both slow and sloppy.
Sloppy,
like,
yeah.
You need, like, a good athlete in there with them. Like, Mondo versus either of these guys would be awesome. Or, like, Kasai versus Lobo.
Yeah, just, yeah. Who's able to kind of, like, carry the match.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, Pondo then rests the broken ladder on top of the wire. He sets a table outside and puts a chair on top of it. He seats Lobo on this chair that's on a table. And I'm like, is he going to fucking run up the ladder, like, Shelton Benjamin style? And instead, he, like, barely clears the top of the barbed wire. The table doesn't break at all. This is probably the low point of the match. The fans just boo. It's like, it's like underwhelming.
Yeah, it's real bad.
And then finally, in ring, Lobo hits a low blow. He pulls Pondo's jersey off, revealing just a big fat belly and, like, a singlet. And then Pondo hits his own low blow. He goes to climb the ladder, and Lobo slingshots Pondo onto the wire. This looked fucking brutal because he's landing off of the ladder onto the wire, and it immediately cuts his shoulder up.
Yeah.
You can just see, like, the gash that the barbed wire makes immediately. And then Lobo goes to the top. He grabs the title for the win at 15 minutes and 10 seconds.
Jesus, it was that felt like the longest match.
Just a minute shorter than the one we just saw.
Yeah, it felt so... It was very bad. Poor way to end it, for sure.
Yeah, slow, boring, sloppy, bad are all words I would use to describe this match. The commentary signs us off as Lobo celebrates. He pulls up Pondo in a show of respect. And
I mean, yeah, we, you know, should, yeah. If you are listening to this, Lobo and Pondo, fair play to you. Yeah. But it just wasn't a good match.
Yeah. Maybe next week they'll get us. So what do you give this show? That was un-effing believable.
Yeah, I mean, that it lives up to its name in a lot of regards. There was a lot of un-effing believable moments, both good and bad. I think it's a two. I think it's a two because those two matches were banging.
That's what I gave it. I also like the tag title match.
Yeah, it was solid. Yeah, it was just like if you cut that main event off and then cut all the gym, you know, if it had been an hour and a half that you could find, I think it would have been approaching a three, but there's just too much shit in there still for it to be any higher than a two.
I agree. Although I will say that might be the favorite match of the podcast so far. Like,
yeah, it was dynamite. It was great.
It was so good.
It was. There's a lot of great moments. I'd rewatch some of those moments for sure.
And no Zandig bullshit either. That always helps the show.
Yeah, Jun Kazai's been a great addition to the roster. I hope he stays in for a while. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what comes next because I know it's a shorter show next week. So I'm very excited for
that. Really?
It's not as long, so that's good.
Made me feel great right there.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, this has been another edition of Comics in the Combat Zone. I've been Jordan Ducharme. If you want to follow me on Instagram or Twitter, it's at FunnyJordanD.
I'm at Pink Hoverboard on Instagram.
And thanks so much for listening. Please keep it tuned to the Wrestling Brain, and we'll be back with you next week.